Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What a game. What a game the other day at Heinz Field. We talked about it off the top because we were taunting Crowley with the pit fight song. But man, that's what college football is all about. Just craziness at the end. I was watching in a bar, Bob, on Saturday. So I had to go back and look at the final quarter today, and all hell was breaking loose. I mean, there was so much to keep track of what was happening. It was insanity. So tons of stories coming out of the game. To me, the two biggest are Neil Brown is lucky he's still coaching today. He's really done nothing at West Virginia, and I mean nothing. I mentioned earlier he's never beaten a team above 15 in the country on the week they played them anyway, and that was number 15 Virginia Tech 1 year. Last year was a total mirage, which some of us knew, and this year looks like it's a pending disaster. How are you up 10 with around 4 minutes left, and the other team has a, what was it, second and 30, first and 30?
Second and 30.
And you don't even get to overtime in that game? You don't even get to overtime. So, Bob, that's story number one. Story number two, and probably the bigger one, is what do we make of Pitt 3 games into the season? And to me, the story is the quarterback. Most of the time when Pitt's been good in my time here, since November of 89 when I arrived, when Pitt's been good, they have a quarterback. And I really like this kid. I don't know how good Pitt is yet. I don't really agree with the Post-Gazette story that I read today, although it was very well written about how, you know, now expectations have been wildly written. To me, they were always going to be at least 2-1, you know, and they're 3-0, and credit to them for these amazing comebacks. But this quarterback and this offense are very interesting to me. I love this kid, his fire, his instincts in the pocket, some of the scrambles that he made at key times, his arm. I can see why Nick Saban recruited him. I could never understand in the offseason when I'd ask Pitt insiders, what's up with Holstein? Oh, I don't think they like him that much. Yarnell's going to start. What? They brought in a kid from Alabama and he's not going to start? That always seemed ridiculous to me. I really like him, Bob. And when you have a quarterback, you become dangerous.
No question. And the fact that he was recruited by Alabama tells you all you need to know about the potential talent and what they saw in him. Now, he saw a roadblock for him to play down there, and I understand that. You got to go to a place where you can play. He has been terrific, and it's just his gutsiness, really, that sticks out, and his willingness to make everyone around him better at critical times. He's done a very good job with that. You know, in that West Virginia game, I thought West Virginia did a very good job of really silencing Desmond Reed, and he's been the number one reason, aside from Holstein, why they've generated so much offense. I mean, the week before, he had 100 yards rushing and receiving. No Pitt running back's ever done that. So they keyed on him. They shut him down. He did not have much of a role, but it was, you know, it takes two to tangle. And as much as I give credit to Pitt for digging deep and not stopping and coming back and winning these games, I thought both Cincinnati and West Virginia really played into their hands with some of their decision-making defensively while nursing a big lead. They did not do what I would have thought teams would do in that situation. And so availability was there. There were some people. Why? I don't understand second and 30. Number one, how you get 40 yards and a touchdown.
They blitzed.
That's what I'm saying. That's a stupid call when you should be flooding the zone and make sure that doesn't happen. But also, if you looked at the last drive, you know, two 75-yard drives in the last 3 minutes. The last one, there are guys running wide open in the middle of the field. Again, the only shot Pitt has is to make those kinds of completions, and West Virginia was kind of a lackadaisical defensive effort there. So it takes two to tangle. But having said that, I think it's time, Joe, to reassess where Pitt is. And you guys like to do this in the regular season when we talk about the Steelers. Everybody has a preseason prediction. Many of them were not good ones. Many people thought it would be a 5-6 win team, maybe.
Well, that's the part I want to hold off on a little bit.
But it's three games into this.
Yeah.
Four would be a win on, and then you go in the ACC.
And they've never had an unbeaten non-conference schedule.
Never, which is surprising. In all the years of Pitt football. What I'll say, though, is have you changed your opinion about the ACC? Most people came into this looking at the preseason ranking, which I hate. Florida State 10, you have Clemson, you have Miami, all these teams. Pitt has a pretty good schedule. Clemson is here. They don't have to deal with, I don't think, Florida State. And all these
Florida
other
states.
All these other, you know, my point is they were supposed to be good.
Yeah.
All these other teams are very average, you know.
Well,
maybe like them.
I don't know that yet. I mean, I can't go along with the idea that suddenly Pitt is going to be competing for an ACC championship until I see them play. No, I know you did.
I'm just trying to get you to up your ante. If you, I forget what your preseason was, but mine was 6 wins. Probably was a good year based on all the people they lost, some of the shortcomings they may have had. I thought that was realistic. Now I don't think it's realistic. I think it would be higher than that.
Well, yeah, it better be higher than that. But Stephen Thompson wrote something for the Post Gazette, really well written and good, sort of speaking to what you're speaking to. And he says that now it's, you know, this wasn't a rebuilding year to them. It was another chance to compete for an ACC championship. And it's time to say it plainly, writes Thompson. This Pitt team is good and capable of contending for something bigger and more tangible than simply a return to mediocrity. Listen, like I just said, when you have a quarterback and I think a lot of offensive weapons, anything could be possible. But I need to see this team play an ACC game. They just played a horrible Cincinnati team, one of the worst teams in Power 5 football.
Which dominated them for three quarters.
And then West Virginia, which is no good. West Virginia got blown out by Penn State. They gave up 400 or so yards to Albany. And then Pitt got by them. And much credit. It's been, again, wildly entertaining, fun to watch. I give them all the credit in the world, but that's different than saying, do I suddenly think Pitt is good, really good maybe, and ready to compete for an ACC championship? All I want is to reserve the right to watch them in an ACC game. And I don't know about these other teams yet, Bob. Cal's 3-0. Miami's number 8 in the country, 3-0. North Carolina's 3-0. And have outscored their opponents 102-47. Louisville looks like a good team. SMU looks like a pretty good team. I have to see the actual, I can't make a sane judgment after watching Pitt play the opponents that they've played and suddenly say, we're looking at the possibility of an ACC championship. Now, we can have this conversation in a couple weeks after they play, well, not Youngstown State, after they play at North Carolina, Cal, Syracuse, at SMU, let's just say North Carolina and Cal. May we revisit the conversation then, Bob?
Yes.
Because North Carolina's 3-0. A lot of these teams have played nobody. Pitt's actually played a better schedule than some of these teams.
Didn't they lose their starting quarterback, though, North Carolina? Or somebody lost the starting quarterback, I saw.
That I don't know. And then after that, Cal. Now, Cal is also 3-0. They beat Auburn, and then they beat San Diego State 31-10. What if they're? I don't know yet. That's my point. But
I agree.
But I do want to stick to the positive here. The positive is two unbelievably entertaining wins. It looks like offense could be back around here, and I love this quarterback. I love this guy. I love his mustache. I love his fiery temperament. He's got a little bit of Tyler Palco in there, right?
Yeah.
He's fun to
just
watch.
Don't give him a live mic when you win a big game. You never know what you might get.
So, yeah, I suppose if the question comes back, are my expectations on a win total raise? Yes. Do I know if Pitt is good, let alone really good this year? I don't know, man. I've got to see a couple more games, at least one conference game, before I make that determination.
But, and here's the other side of that. To your point about waiting, I mean, honestly, the odds of them winning either of those games in the fourth quarter, when you look at their history, I think there was an 18-year span. I saw a number on this where they were 0-72 when they trailed by 10 points or more in the fourth quarter. This year, they're 2-0. When trailing by 10 points or more in the fourth quarter. It's hard to make those comebacks.
That's incredible.
So, you know, yeah, they put themselves in holes, but they've dug out from those holes. That says a lot about them, and you could build on that. And then it's going to have to carry over into the ACC schedule, which starts not this week but next. So,
He has
maybe
three.
Maybe too early to make that proclamation that they're going to be. But I still think they're going to be better than what maybe I thought, or maybe what a lot of people thought.
That's fair. I do think that's fair. And Holstein may be way better than people thought. Three 300-yard games, Bob. Three of them. That's unbelievable.
Nobody since Alex Van Pelt, I think, has done that.
If you took
to start a career,
every team in college and pro football and added up the records of all teams of, let's just say, the last decade of when you're down 21 in any game, you would have a winning percentage of what? 2%? 1%?
Yeah, not very good.
And then if you took all the teams in college and pro football over the last decade and said, what's the winning percentage when you're down 10 or more with less than 5 minutes left in the game? It's the same thing. You don't win those games, let alone two in a row. So credit, much credit to them, because that was exciting stuff.
That's what I like most about it. It's what college football should be. Fun atmosphere, two teams, rivals going at it, ups and downs, swings of emotion, and then the final drive, which was just surreal to me, how they put two of those drives back-to-back and won the game. So you could take away a lot from their season, but those kind of memories, those kinds of games, that was one of the most exciting games in the history of this 107-yard rivalry.
Yes.
Your rivalry. Because it just, the dynamics of it that contributed to that ending. Similar to what we saw 2 years ago here in Pittsburgh.
It was so fun and crazy and wild. You know, you get more of that ideally in college football than in the pros. I think when you have evenly matched teams and it's just insanity at the end of games, although I probably shouldn't say that because the 1 o'clock games yesterday, it seems like every week in the NFL, if you're watching Red Zone, it's like addictive. It's like every game's coming down to the wire. So I may decide to take back that statement, Bob, but this was unbelievable in the truest sense of that overused word. And Holstein really has great instincts in there too. I was rewatching some of those scrambles. He was sacked, and he was the one he spun out of. And there was another one. And I don't even think Pickett had this, at least certainly not in the pros. I know it's a very different game. Was sensing pressure when you can't see it and leaving the pocket at precisely the right time. Those were amazing plays he made on those last two drives. He made those drives.
There's no question. His ability to create and extend plays. And I think the word there is extend. He knew what to do to keep that play alive, whatever it was. And he made the accurate throws after that.
So I don't want to squelch the possibility either. I mean, it's possible that we could be looking at Pitt in 4 weeks that they're 7-0, 8-0, and are a national story. And people are talking about him as a low-key Heisman guy. You start your career with three 300-yard games. But it's way too early in the competition so far. At least leaves me with some question marks.
Yeah, and that's a fair assessment. It does. And again, we don't know a lot about these teams. I will say this, though.
Maybe these teams are better than the ACC. I don't know.
Given the fact that there is a 12-team playoff for the first time, we're going to see that play out. Is there a better conference that Pitt could be in to give them a shot at doing this? Because if there were any of
these, no, you're right about that.
The ACC seems to be fairly wide open.
Maybe the Pac-2, if they were in that, they could be the third team and win it.
Looks like they're adding six teams or four teams to make it a Pac-6 right now, and who knows, a six-pack, maybe a 12-pack later.
What was I going to say? Thank you.
Oh, we got the beer going. Do you have any wine in there?
He may. Okay. If you get a sound of uncorking a wine bottle, that
there is no sound. Or, yeah, there is a sound for that.
You know what? It's fun. I'm entertained by Pitt football again. Last year was painful. Just painful. Yeah.
3-9 will do that to you.
And the offense was ridiculous. It was between the Steelers and the Pitt offense last year. What are we doing here? So this is a huge upgrade when you have a quarterback and a fun offense to watch. This is great stuff. But after the game, we had Pat Narduzzi piping up again.
You gotta love the emotion, though, of that.
I do. We were talking last week, Limits and I, about how there's not many characters as coaches anymore. He is actually a character. This dude says anything that's on his mind. He'll willingly bury himself at any point in any season, which is kind of admirable in a way. But he certainly made national news, and a lot of people did like it the other day, with this comment after the game.
I think our DBs did a heck of a job, period. I mean, some of the calls we got, made hit out of bounds.
That she challenged your defense, specifically your secondary in this one. How do you think they answered that?
I think our DBs did a heck of a job, period. I mean some of the calls we got, made hit out of bounds, they catch a ball with their hands in the face, and I never seen anything like it. You know? Wow. We beat West Virginia in the backyard brawl, and we beat the officials too in one game.
Well, you knew there was.
I love that.
You knew there was going to be a fine coming his way, and there was.
There was. I love that. Let's talk next whether there was any merit behind those comments, because that's a big comment to make. And a lot of people would say, unnecessary. You won the game, Pat. You know, do you think that's going to play well for officials in the future? I don't know. That's just a question. I also have a question of why a Big 12 crew would do a game like that. Like, if you have a Big 12 team and an ACC team, why don't you have like an SEC crew? Is that a reasonable question, Bob? Why would you have a crew from one of the two conferences involved in a game?
Right. In non-conference games, I think it should be shared. You know, figure out a way to do it. Some other conference gets involved. You don't have one over the other. And that's not to say that these guys are going to be tilted or slanted in any way. It's tough to officiate a game. But I agree with your original point. I don't think it needed to be said. There was enough emotion there that could be bypassed. And all it's going to lead to is questions about what you said as opposed to what you did.
Well, having said all that, I'm glad he said it, Bob, because it's good for business. And like I said with him, I mean, there's just no filter, which is a wonderful thing in some ways. Let's talk about this. Was there any merit to Pat Narduzzi blatantly and publicly ripping the officials here? 412-928-9370. And is Pitt going to become a story? I remember all the way back to the days that I started covering Pitt during the beginning days of the Walt Harris era, and then I covered the Big East for ESPN. And one of my biggest gripes was they never get off to like a nationally noticeable start where everybody's like, wow, Pitt's 3-0, Pitt's 4-0. And every other team in the old Big East, even when it was starting to fall apart, would have at least one year where everybody was talking about them for a little while. South Florida did it. Cincinnati did it. Rutgers, for God's sakes, got off to a couple of great starts where they're undefeated in the middle of seasons and playing games where everybody's talking about them. Did I mention UConn? I mentioned Cincinnati. Of course, West Virginia. Never Pitt. Never. They haven't started 4-0 since the year 2000, for God's sakes. So I guess that one year, yeah. But why not ever be able to start where people are talking about you at 6-0 and 7-0? Because that's when it becomes really fun. And like you said, Bob, with a 12-team playoff, you can dare to dream when you're 6-0. Right. You certainly can, given their schedule. So they're doing it. It looks like they're going to get off to a 4-0 start and be undefeated in the non-conference for the first time ever. They joined the Big East in 91. They didn't have, you know, people say, well, what about 76? They weren't in a conference.
Right.
Right? So this is it. 4-0. That would be great stuff.
But I will also say this. Youngstown State in the past has given them fits at times. So teams like Ohio University, coming off a win like that with all that emotion, you know.
If they lose to Youngstown State, shut down the program.
But I'm telling you, it may be a sloppy game
Paul Christ ain't walking through that door to lose to Youngstown State. At least I hope
not. How about Duquesne? Congrats to Jerry Schmidt and his Dukes. They went and beat Youngstown State 28-25 the other day. Good for their program.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Joe.
Your thoughts on Narduzzi after the game. We'll do that next at 928-9370.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Wow. We beat Virginia in the backyard brawl, and we beat the officials too in one game.
Well, I know of one Pitt West Virginia game where they beat West Virginia and the officials, and that was 13-9, and that was the most egregious example I've ever seen, especially live, a live sporting event, or maybe any, where it looked like the referees wanted one team to win. That was the most blatant example I've ever seen. The other day, I can understand if Narduzzi was ticked off at some of the calls, but some went the other way, Bob. West Virginia had a touchdown pass called back on a holding that the analyst, I forget who was working the game, said, I don't really see anything there. They had a touchdown called back on an interference play. The call, I think Narduzzi complained about the hit out of bounds on Green. Yeah, that was a good call.
That was a good call. I agree with you. I think that was the wrong case to make a statement about officiating. There have been far worse examples.
But there were some other ones to talk about.
I know, but it goes both ways. I honestly think that when you look at it and break it down, both teams could have had complaints. But who doesn't when there's a penalty flag called?
No, the targeting penalty was a good call against Pitt.
It was.
Do you agree with that?
Yep.
Now, let me see. I have some of these written down here.
I think the main one that he was talking about was the push-off in the end zone or non-push-off call West Virginia's put a touchdown on.
It could have been offensive pass interference. It could have been.
Could have been.
But the ones that I would have been ticked off, and I would be if I was a Pitt fan, were some of these holding calls on the last two drives. The one on number 50, whose name I forget, was a BS call, and then the real BS call was on the punt that preceded the winning drive. They called number 8 for a hold. What?
Yeah, I thought
there
were
18 guys in there, and that stuff always, there was nothing blatant, and that's the stuff that's really right before the winning drive. You're going to call that it was an okay punt return that had nothing to do with whatever that guy was doing. That's the type of crap that says they're subtly trying to screw us over. However, there were many calls, like I said, on the other side, and it's not like the referees pocketed their flags on West Virginia either. In fact, on the winning touchdown, they were going to call interference, right?
Yes, they were.
Was it the winning touchdown or the one where it was second and 30?
Second and 30.
Yeah, they would have gotten a first down anyway.
That was the last one.
On interference. So it's not like they weren't calling anything on West Virginia. They were. But a couple of those little subtle holding calls, which you could call in any play, so then you start thinking, oh, they're picking now to call that, really would have ticked me off. I do get that part of it, but it didn't rise to the level of, oh, my God, this is Sacramento against the Lakers or the 13-9 game. It just didn't.
No, the 13-9 game was the biggest example, I thought. So that one's pretty well documented what happened in that game. But with the issue of officiating, it's tough to call. You know, you have to be very very consistent more than anything with these calls. And you, every time there's contact, you cannot just immediately assume there's a flag involved. I think sometimes all levels of officiating, we see that. There's a little bit of contact here, and so you're gonna penalize defenders mostly in these kinds of situations. We saw it in the Bengals game yesterday, that 4th-and-16 call. To me, that was desperation time.
That was a good call, Bob.
Yeah, if it had been a no call, I don't think it would have been something that I would have looked at and said, should have been called the other. I wouldn't have yelled about it. It could have been either way. I think that's a play that just, you need the defender who has a right to go to the ball and the guy who's trying to make the catch. They both go up at the same time. There's contact. Of course there's contact.
To me, you have to make that call.
On 4th-and-16, I don't think you do.
Does that have to do with it?
Because I just think it was a desperation attempt. Both guys are going for a ball. It wasn't he was dragged down. None of it.
He hit the guy in the back of the head.
You're going up for a ball. There's going to be contact.
Well, the point is the guy was early. The guy hit the receiver way too early.
Did you hear how City Limits jumped in and said you were wrong, Bob?
Yeah, he did. And a lot of people agree with you and you, Joe. But I'm just saying, in those situations, if you start calling every little time there's any sort of contact, you're gonna paint yourself in a very
I thought that
tough
was blatant
corner.
Contact, but I do hear you that games are over officiated. If I had a problem with any Pittsburgh football game from the weekend with the officiating, it was the Steelers game, and I'm talking for both teams. It was unwatchable in the second half. There were 6 penalties on 5 plays at one point, including almost back-to-back. Maybe it was 2 out of the 3 plays were offsetting penalties.
Right.
Flags
so they had 22
everywhere.
Flags thrown and 19 accepted. It was just too many.
It was too much. And yet, I saw T.J. Watt and Highsmith being so blatantly held, they could have thrown five more, but they could have taken some off the other end. It was ridiculous. Why don't we talk about a couple of those calls? I heard you on TV saying the Van Jefferson call was the wrong call. No, it wasn't. And Steratore was wrong, too. He said that Van Jefferson didn't initiate the contact. Jefferson went in there and crashed into the guy.
I think that's a play you can call or not call. And one way or the other, I think the best thing to do in those situations is not call it.
That
if
was
it's
as
blatant. Yes, it wasn't blatant.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't
yes,
blatant. No, it wasn't.
It was as blatant a pick call, play as you'll ever
I've
see.
I've seen pick plays not called that
he
were worse than
that. He ran in and practically cracked back the guy.
That's what I'm talking about, consistency with officiating. One unit won't call it, another will. How do you play the game when you don't know what they're going to call and you have a play design that's supposed to create space for your best receiver?
Now you've caused a coughing attack.
I thought it was well schemed by the Steelers to create that opening.
He went in there and practically pulled a Hines Ward on the guy. He initiated the contact. He cracked him, and he created a wide open advantage for his receiver. I can't imagine what Steratore was looking at there, and I can't imagine what you were.
I'm saying the consistency of the call. Have you not seen it where it's been ignored and plays go on like that?
Sure.
So how do you do it? If you're a player, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to you're going into a middle of the field to create a space for Pickens.
He blatantly hit the guy.
No, he didn't. I'm sorry, Bob.
I'm 1,000% with Bob. The defender is the one who initiated the contact with Jefferson.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
That wasn't true.
Dean Blandino said, too.
It's not Dean Blandino. It was Gene Steratore.
Well, whoever the hell it was. That's
just blatantly wrong. Jefferson initiated the contact.
The defender ran into Jefferson a half a second
I thought
before
it was not. It did not rise to the level of a penalty.
I thought it
you
was
can
an
say
obvious
whatever you want.
Call.
No, it's not.
It was.
You want flags. Joe, you're a flag day guy. You want
no,
more flags.
No, I want flags for egregious plays and obvious plays.
And that wasn't either.
Obvious
no, it wasn't.
Call. Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
Josh Yowie agrees with me, so there.
Well, Josh is a man of the people.
He's one person.
That makes two of us.
What I'm saying is...
You are two people.
Every time there's
there
something...
are many more.
Are you sick of this? Are you sick of holding on returns? Every single
yes.
play. I watched
what returns?
All day yesterday. Any return, there's a hold.
I'm sick of that. And as I said earlier,
unless it immediately comes into the play,
as I said earlier,
affects the outcome of the play. Some of these holds are on the other side of the field that don't impact that.
It was like the return in the pit game, the last return. It didn't affect the return.
If it doesn't affect the return, why are you throwing a flag?
I agree. This the one on Van Jefferson directly affected a scoring play and was blatant. And I don't know what I don't know what you guys are looking at. I'll be honest about that. But there were also, as I mentioned, blatant missed holding calls on Watt and Highsmith.
Every play almost. And that's the problem.
The stuff they do to Watt
if
is
you call
almost
play,
illegal.
Listen,
I mean, on the streets.
If you're an offensive lineman, I would tell any offensive lineman, when I'm with T.J. Watt, hold him every time you can. They can't possibly call it on every down, and they won't. So do what you can to get in his way, and if it means taking a penalty, so be it.
And I'll tell you
not
another
call
that
every
sucked.
Time.
And for anyone who thinks I'm anti-Steeler here, I'm actually on balance – think the Steelers got the worst of it yesterday. I think the Jefferson call was very correct. The worst call of the day was the non-holding holding call on Dan Moore.
He didn't do anything. Again, though, that's what we're talking about.
These over-officious
jerks. Egregious holds on T.J. Watt not called. Dan Moore gets called for nothing.
Poor Dan Moore.
No, I'm just saying that's...
No, I'm saying Dan Moore. He gets enough grief. And then they get a play, a first down called back
on a non-holding hold. Generally speaking, let me ask you this question. Would you rather have more flags?
Less.
If you want less flags and you have to let some of this go, that Jefferson was not a penalty.
No, that you can't do that, Bob.
Yes, you can.
It's a blatant pick play at the goal line and an easy touchdown on which he initiated not just contact, but hard contact.
Okay. We agree to disagree.
Let's go get a clip of the play, and then we can fight. But if I'm gonna err on one side or the other, it's gonna be on less flags. Trust me on that. Like I said, it needs to be obvious, it needs to be egregious, and it needs to affect the play. We had Blandino on here once when he was the NFL's VP of officiating. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that gave us no opinion last week on the one play in the Steeler game. I forget which play it was now. Was it the Watt offside?
You're right about that. There was no, I forget.
Yeah, all he said was, well, they can get together and talk about
it. Right, right.
Thanks.
What was that play
Dean,
now?
How much are they paying you?
Play.
I don't remember. But we had him on when he was the VP of officiating. He said one of our emphases, which is the plural of emphasis. Is that right, Bob?
I don't know. Emphasize.
One of our emphases this year, this was, I don't know, 2017, was to make sure if you're going to call holding, that it's a hold that affects the play. In other words, if it's a sweep right and the guy's already 5 yards downfield and you happen to catch somebody on the far left side grabbing a jersey, don't call it. Please, right. or else we're never going to have a game.
Well, we see that all the time on returns.
Yes.
Every time there's a return, we have multiple screens. Every time there's a return, there's a flag. So, okay, none of them that I saw was directly impacting anything. So, I don't know. It's tough. I think officials have a very difficult job, especially in this age of Twitter, social media, everything thrown back at them. It's hard. And not only that, but the league makes it harder because they come down with amendments to all their things and their emphases, as your word.
But sometimes you have to call, I will agree, you have to call holding because it directly affects a play. The Broderick Jones, the play that got Broderick.
Every single play.
No, you need to be judicious. It needs to be very obvious. And it needs to directly affect the play. And I'm sorry, but the Broderick Jones hold, too, fell under that category, although I had people disagreeing with me on Twitter. If he doesn't hold, blatantly grab the guy's jersey, that guy may track down Fields.
I agree.
Before Fields made that great throw.
That was right in front of the official, too, as the play was developing.
Yeah. But overall, that game was unwatchable in the second half. Just unwatchable crap is what the game boiled down to in the second half. I'm proud to say that Josh Yoey agrees with me, Bob. He's generally regarded as a hockey guy, but I think he's very sharp generally. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think he's real sharp. I love Josh's opinion on just about everything, especially hockey. So, yes.
Wonderful man as well. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Limits, have you ever met him?
I have not. Actually, I think that might be wrong. I've never met him in person, but I think he did a video Zoom call with us when I was at Robert Morris.
Bob, does that count as meeting somebody? A phone call or a video Zoom call? I don't think so.
I agree.
I don't agree with that at all.
I disagree with you 100% limits.
I said I've never met him in person, but I just saw him over a video call. So that was the only interaction I've ever had.
And how did it go?
It went well. But that was all. I haven't talked to him since. All.
Well, hopefully
I would like to talk to him again.
Yeah, maybe someday. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge Route 19. Peters Township celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. We've talked about Sidney Crosby signing his contract. One of the most unselfish, great athletes in the history of sports. Truly. We've talked about the Broderick Jones disaster. They could make a documentary on the series that he came into the game. Pat Meyer and Mike Tomlin. Their best thinking was, man, the offense is humming today. We just had a long touchdown drive. Let's put Broderick Jones in the game. Fatanu's playing great. We're pinned at our 1 yard line. Let's put the guy in who gave up 8 sacks in a row in a preseason game. That's a good idea. And it almost cost them the game. We've talked about everything, Bob. And guess what we're going to talk about now?
Round the National Football League.
Yes, that's your favorite thing, isn't it?
That and decisions.
No, the finances of that deal at the moment were good for the Penguins. You're going to be paying him 11 and a half, I think, or 10 and a half, something like that, for many years to come, right?
Mm-hmm.
Paying Ryan Graves all that money, bringing in bottom six guys left and right. A lot of guys would like to be handcuffed to the tune of all that, which was basically go out and make the biggest deal in the offseason for Carlson, and then throw money around wherever you want after that. Yeah, go spend $30 million on a goalie who doesn't have any playoff pedigree. So I don't want to hear from people out there that he's been handcuffed here. It was the opposite. He was told in his first offseason, go out on the town, buddy, and have a great time. And that's what he did. And that's why this offseason they've done basically nothing, because he made all his big multi-year moves last offseason. Bob.
Well, they brought in people this offseason, though. They've gone out and gotten some guys who they think can help them. And I think, given
the
and when I say constraints, that's what I'm talking about. He loaded up last year on the money. He can't duplicate that this year because he brought in Carlson, he brought in Graves. That's big money to those two guys, not to mention other guys. But the point is, you do that to win now. He didn't acquire Erik Karlsson for a future what happened last year didn't work the way they wanted, and it has to change. And I do think year two here won't be a difference. I think you're going to see that power play get back to where it was, operating at a 25% kind of clip, or 22-23%, not what we saw last year. And I think they're going to have, that's going to be the number one issue.
Well, that in overtime.
Right. Well,
those are two issues that basically cost them their season. And if they ever became bad at either one, they'd make the playoffs. All they needed to be was bad instead of historically hideous. If they become good or great, then we're going to start talking about rising to the top of the East.
Yeah.
That's how important those two issues are.
But with a veteran-laden team, if they get to the playoffs, that's the goal. If you do, best of sevens, you can change things around quite a bit.